Our first guest on the show this morning is former minister and minister indeed in several departments, Richard Bruton, who's also chairman of the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party. But it's in his capacity as former communications minister that we want to talk with him primarily this morning, because he was the minister when the contract was signed for the National Broadband Plan rollout just over 2 years ago. And there has been much criticism of the plan and the speed of the rollout. But Deputy Bruton is remaining optimistic of the rapid expansion now of the plan in coming weeks in this particular region. Deputy Bruton, good morning to you.
Morning, how are you?
And welcome to the programme. I suppose, did people really think when you signed that contract, I think it was at a school in County Wicklow over 2 years ago, do you think people felt they would still be waiting for a service all this time later?
Well, it's not over 2 years ago. Don't forget it was the end of 2019. But, you know, I think this is the most ambitious plan of its type in Europe. We plan to connect every single premises to high-speed broadband. So it's 544,000 premises will be served by this, and despite the COVID crisis, the survey work has proceeded on track. So it's meeting its deadlines, and it's rolled out. For example, the broadband connection points, 113 of those have already gone live. I know 6 schools have gone live that didn't have high-speed broadband in Sligo, Leitrim. We have, you know, the prospect now that by the end of this year in Sligo, Leitrim, there'll be 5,000 premises connected. So this is proceeding at pace, but it is a very, very big project. I mean, just the scale of it is 140,000 kilometres of fibre is being laid here. And it has to use existing poles of the AIR ESB. They have to be surveyed to ensure that, you know, they will be robust to carry the service. So it is a complex project. And, you know, while everyone would love to see it done quicker, you know, we have put in place, you know, good contracts that are being met. And there is, you know, work now being done to see can it be speeded up. And if we can get everyone working together, that's a possibility. But, you know, obviously it requires a lot of partners. It's not just down to NBI to speed things up. You have to be able to make ready poles by whether they're AIR or ESB and so on. So it is a complex contract. But I think you'll remember at the time people said, no, this was foolish, we shouldn't be doing this. I don't think anyone is saying that now. And every day I go into the Dáil, I hear people who, you know, during 2019 were railing against us doing this, now saying, when will it come? It's not coming quick enough. So, you know, certainly the attitude has changed, because I think we realise now that, you know, high-speed broadband is the future. If we want remote health, if we want remote working, if we want enterprise hubs.
Well, no doubt what people are saying to you or asking you in the Dáil is when a particular area is going to have high-speed broadband. And you mentioned a lot of ifs and buts there in the reply. Can you tell the people of the Northwest when they will all be provided with a high-speed acceptable broadband service?
Well, the contract lays out that the whole thing will be substantially completed by year five, but every house won't be connected until year 6 and 7. But there is work now to see can, if you like, that those later ones be brought forward to achieve a 5-year target. But because of the, you know, when the contract was signed, we were very clear that we had to make realistic commitments, and people, you know, wanted to know that this was robust. So the contract has set out that timescale, and each year there is a number, you know, over 100,000 connections per year will be what is being rolled out at peak. Obviously, there will be some harder to get at locations that will require some of the more complex work towards the end. And clearly, if we can do that more quickly, that would be something that everyone would want to do.
But of course,
we had to be realistic and set a contract term.
But as you know, the issue has been focused by the level of people working remotely. And we're also told that it is the government's intention to allow people to work remotely illegally from September onwards. But in this region, a lot of people just simply can't do that, Minister, because they don't have the adequate broadband. So when they hear, you know, year 5, year 6, year 7, they'll say, well, why are we being left behind?
Well, it's not a question of people being left behind. It's just if you're laying, you know, 1.5 million poles, 140,000 kilometres of cable connecting from 230 exchanges and having to do that work over, it takes time to deliver a project of that scale. I mean, this is nearly a quarter of the population in something like 90% of the geographic area. So, you know, this contract is working in the most, you know, thinly populated areas to deliver a project that the commercial companies couldn't deliver. You know, none of the others could deliver high-speed broadband commercially in these areas. So that's why this is being done. But I think that complexity of reaching, you know, nearly 90% of the geographic area with fibre and delivering that effectively, that does take time. And while, you know, I welcome the impatience that people had, because when I was trying to get this through, it was people saying this was something we shouldn't be doing. But the reality is I can't foresee any sort of thriving future for rural Ireland that doesn't have high-speed broadband at its heart. And I think your questions this morning reflect that. So this is the right decision. And if we can get it done more quickly, that would be great. But it will require a number of partners working together if that were to be achieved. But I know that the Taoiseach and Tánaiste are very keen to achieve that and will be working to see can it be speeded up.
Right, OK. Can I ask you, in your capacity as former Minister for Enterprise, of the decision, not a surprise decision, of the Ulster Bank to exit the Irish market? What's your reaction to that this morning, Deb?
Well, it is very disappointing. I mean, Ulster Bank, as you know, has been here for 160 years. It's you know, employs over 2,500 people. I mean, it is embedded in communities. It has been, you know, historically, it's been a good business bank. You know, it has been good to and developed a lot of support for small business. So to see that pull out and the uncertainty it creates. Now, at least the announcement this morning gives some degree of confidence that these loan books will be passed to banks that have a long-term future, that is not going to be worked out by, you know, someone who just holds the loan book and works out over time. And I think that's really important if that can be achieved. We need to see the emergence of bank competition. And again, one of the ambitions of government is to see another force emerge so that we don't lose Ulster and just see the big two dominating everything.
Yeah, and you would agree, as most people believe, that would not be good for our banking services or systems.
No, it wouldn't. I mean, unfortunately, this is still the legacy of the crash that we suffered. You know, this, you know, because of the crash, our banks have had, you know, they carry the penalty, I suppose, of having to have more capital reserves for loan books that, you know, continue to struggle in some cases. So our banks are not as agile as banks elsewhere, and that, you know, that is part of a legacy problem. But, you know, a lot of progress has been made, and, you know, I suppose what we've now to try and absorb this, you know, shock to the system. But I know that there will be huge determination to work to get a good outcome here. Like, ultimately, bank regulation is not something, you know, government doesn't pull all the levers here. So, you know, there's a limited amount that government can do, but it's absolutely determined to use that and to try and achieve, you know, a long-term proper banking system emerging from this, not, you know, loan books being dispersed and no continuity of service. I mean, funding is crucial to the growth of enterprise, to homeowners, to everything. We need to get this right. But today is a pretty dismal day. But I suppose it has been flagged for a while, and, you know, there is a good deal of work, I suppose, being done in anticipation to see how can this be worked through. And you see today, you know, different banks being involved now in looking at can a future be worked out. And Ulster are at least saying that this will be a matter of done over a number of years, so there will be space to work out a good solution here.
Okay, I don't want to keep reminding you of your former jobs, but it just shows you how experienced you are as a government minister. But of course, you were always all previously always were also the education minister. What do you make of the Leaving Cert situation? It's a bit of a mess, Deputy Bruton, do you not think, at the moment?
I don't. I think it's the best outcome that could have been hoped for, really. And I think students at a very early stage, you know, felt that they wanted a choice between a predicted grade, as they describe it, and sitting the exam, because there's been so much gaps in their learning. So I think they are getting that choice. So you will have a predictive grade, which will be developed by the professional expertise of their teachers. But they will also have the opportunity to sit an exam in June. And that exam has been modified with, you know, having a wider range of choice to reflect the fact that not all of the course will have been covered. And of course, the marking will be, you know, suitably less severe, because at the end of the day, the same sort of proportions will come through with high grades, as always. So it does, I think it gives people some reassurance that they will have a predictive grade to fall back on, but I think an incentive to sit the exam and do as best as they can. And they get the choice of whichever grade is best in each subject. So, you know, there is a bit of a win-win for students. Now, I know there have been... You know, teachers have points.
Yeah, it's not a win-win for teachers, as you well know. What would you say to the teachers who have difficulty with this?
Well, it's not ideal, and of course it's not ideal for teachers, but I suppose it's the best that can be made available in the time that we have. And, you know, I think we have learnt from the predictive grades operation last year. I understand that one of the things teachers won't be asked to do is to provide, you know, detailed rankings of pupils, so that, you know, that can be, that a ranking is made available as well as a marking. I understand it being there. So that will take a bit of the pressure off teachers. But yeah, it's not ideal. You know, teachers have always felt that they want that independent outside, you know, an external assessment, and in an ideal world, that's what you'd have. But, you know, in this sort of climate, you have to try and offer students the best that we can. And I think the predictive grades is best. I mean, it allows a student have the work that they have done right since the junior certificate, the junior cycle, through all their work that has been done, which has been professionally overseen by their teachers. All of that can weigh in the balance so that they can get recognition for work they've done despite the stress of recent times when things have been very disrupted. And I think that will give people reassurance. And they still have then the option to go on and sit the exam, which will be fully externally evaluated. I think the other reassurance that people have is it's the State Examinations Commission oversees this. They have years of experience in ensuring that, you know, these processes are fair. They will ensure that, you know, there is standardization. Like, say, not everyone sits the exam in June. They will ensure that, you know, there is no, it's not more harshly treated or assessed if you are sitting the exam than if you went for the predictive grade. So they will make sure that it is a fair yardstick is applied when you do sit the exam. So that if you have done particularly well in the exam, you will get the credit for that. And I think they have that experience to ensure that, you know, fair ways of assessment and weighing up performance are applied here. And I think that gives people reassurance.